perfect servitors of the Lord are considered his personal associates, whereas devotees endeavoring to attain perfection are called neophytes. Among the associates, some are attracted by the opulences of the personality of Godhead, and others are attracted by nuptial love of Godhead. The former devotees are placed in the realm of Vaikuntha to render reverential devotional service, whereas the latter devotees are placed in Vrindavan for the direct service of Sri Krishna. Such pure devotees are of two types, personal associates, parishats, and neophyte devotees, sadhakas. Oma jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurum minitang jena shi. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. This is the very, very beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And in the very beginning of the book, you normally have an introduction and a preface and a contents page. And this is what Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is doing here, because with the introduction and the preface and the foreword and the contents, you can look at that and you can get a fair idea of what the book is about. And they say that when you write a book, you've got to have something to say. Otherwise, why bother writing a book? So when you write a book, the first thing you do is tell people, this is what I believe to be true. Sometimes on television, someone has written a book, and the interviewer will, so, I see you've just written this book. You've written this book. And can you tell us a little bit about what's inside the book? Or why did you feel that a book needed to be written? What is it that about your life meant that a book had to be written at this point in your life? So we want to know some of the experiences that the person has been through, why he or she felt that a book needed to be written about those experiences, what those experiences and what the person has learned, and therefore what he or she will write, how will that benefit the world? And generally speaking, if a person should buy your book, what's going to be in it? You know, is it a good read? Okay. So this is only verse 64. Okay. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who is 90 years old and can hardly see, what to speak of write, and he's writing by candlelight some of the time. He's writing at Radha Kund, and you can still there, you can still go to the room where he wrote this particular book. And he's using diaries that were written quite a few years before. He's writing, of course, in a scratchy pen with maybe charcoal ink on palm leaves or some papyrus-type paper, whatever they were using in the early 1600s in Bengal. But it is all, you know, he's writing a book that is difficult for him to write. He's drawing together the experience of others. And at the same time, he's trying not to duplicate things because his time is very limited. So Vrindavan Das Thakur has already written a book about the lifetime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And now he wants to write something about the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he's writing after the six Goswamis, so he doesn't want to duplicate anything, but he wants it to be essential information. And this is really a book about, there's a few things that you should understand that this book is going to explain to you, dear reader. He said, but before I start explaining, let me offer my respectful obeisances to the person who's, in my life, given me everything. Is the person who's given me all the blessings that I need to be writing this book. Let me first give you a little glimpse of what this book is going to be about. And then he writes verses, and those verses that he writes are, if you like, his introduction, his condensation. That's what you do with any Vedic book, actually. So he's following a format that was many centuries old. He gives the reader an understanding. And he gives the reader an understanding which in medieval or late medieval India was quite a unique understanding. And he goes straight to that understanding, you see. Not only does he tell people that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which was a lot for people outside Bengal and Orissa to, and some parts of what is now UP. As soon as you go down south in India, you will find that Krishna is one of the incarnations of Lord Vishnu. So he's already saying that something's quite revolutionary, that Krishna actually is avatari. He's actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many personalities of Godhead. Firstly, there is Godhead. The Upanishads describe Godhead. Godhead is everything which is Brahman. Then there is Vishisht. There is qualifications in that Godhead. And we find that the ultimate qualification in Godhead, or the great Brahman, the great spirit, the great white light, the Param Jyoti, Param Prakash, in that there is actually distinctions. And the ultimate distinction, as far as you can go, if you carry on finding the attributes of that Brahman, you will find a person. So there is Godhead, and then there is the personality of Godhead. And then you will find that there are personalities of Godhead. Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Narasingha, Rama. How does it go? Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Narasingha, Dev, Vamana, Parashuram, Rama, Balaram, Buddha, Kalki, and 10 incarnations. Jayadeva Goswami was writing about 10. Srimad Bhagavatam writes about 26. And then there's more. You can find more. So there are many personalities of Godhead. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, I think he's already spoke about this, that there are Prakash and Vilas. Has he spoken about that yet? Maybe towards the end of the chapter. Prakash and Vilas. And he says there are those incarnations of Godhead that look the same as the Lord himself. Like one candle has lit another candle, which lights another candle, which lights another candle. So many different avatars. We spoke last time of the meaning of avatar. Not the perverted Hollywood movie version of the word avatar, in which you, an ordinary mortal human being who is going to die, can create an avatar in a virtual world, but that is simply the imitation of Godhead. But Godhead is the actual real world, and he's creating avatars to work and do his bidding in this world of virtual reality. This is the meaning of avatar. So there are those avatars that look the same as the original Purusha. And then there are those avatars that look completely different. Half man, half lion, fish, warrior. You see. What else? Boar. Huh? Horse. Yes. Whose name was? Hayagriva. What did he do? He saved the Vedas. That's right. Save the Vedas. You see? What else? Turtle. Kurma. Yes. So all these different forms of the Lord. These are all personalities of Godhead. But then he's saying that the supreme personality of Godhead is Vrindavan Chandra. That flute player who entices all the gopis to him. Now, it's very interesting. I read a story just the other day. The head of the Ramanuja Sampradaya, I'm not talking about any modern personality, but someone who, if you speak to someone in the Sri Sampradaya, that Vaishnava Sampradaya that comes from Lakshmi, you will discover that there is one name which keeps coming out time and time again, and that is the name of the earliest of the Alwars, or the great saints in the succession of saints leading up to Ramanuja. And you will find that this person, Nam Alwar, he was born and he did not speak, and his parents became worried. You know, normally if a child says goo goo gaga, then the parents become very happy. Only the parents will appreciate such sounds. And then when the child finally gets da or mama, then the parents immediately think, yes, he is speaking to me directly. Every parent is the same. Every parent is the same. When your child says the first word, you become... Firstly, when you're waiting for a child, that is such a long, long wait. The parents of Vedanta Deshika, who was another great saint in that line, they were told, the Lord came to them in a dream because they were childless, and he said, I will personally be born in your family. So they thought, this is wonderful that we've had a dream. And usually if husband and wife have the same dream on the same night, that's pretty interesting. They compare notes in the morning, and they think, well, there might possibly be something in that, especially when you are crying in the dream and you wake up in tears and shaking and physical bodily transformations. So they had that dream, and they didn't have their child until 12 years later. 12 years they had to wait, you see. But when the child came, he was a great saint. He was a great saint. So, but he was speaking at a very early age. In Nam Alwar's case, he wasn't speaking at all. They waited and waited and waited. Then the child was born. They waited for him to speak. Nothing. So then, sometimes parents, they just become very disturbed, almost maddened. And in a culture where everybody believes in that every child's health is the results of either blessings or curses from a previous life, or the gods, or that God himself alone can change this, then the child is taken to the local temple. It happens in other religions as well. Somebody, when I was in Italy, somebody told me a story where they had a child who wouldn't speak. Any mothers who have children who don't speak, please don't copy this at home. So the lady was so, she was so disturbed. She threw the child with a little bit more force than should have been at the feet of the Virgin Mary. And the little baby bounced against the statue of the Virgin Mary. And then it was a miracle. Shri Radha Gokulananda. Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. And then the child began to speak. You see, the child began to speak. So of course then the lady said, this is a miracle. The Virgin Mary has made my child speak. And then everybody started coming to that particular Virgin Mary for many, many miles around, hoping for a similar miracle. So the parents of Nam Alwar, they brought him to the local temple. And the priest did some blessings. But then ultimately, when he was old enough to sit, and then after they brought him to the temple for many, many days, they just sat him under a tree in the temple courtyard. They were in the same village, of course. Not that they abandoned him, but they sat him under a tree. And the child went into meditation, went into deep, deep meditation. And the child didn't say anything for the next 16 years. Because the local people, they thought that he was a great saint. Anyone with a particular unusual attribute in an Indian village usually becomes, you know, the focal point of the local ladies particularly. So they would feed him. But he didn't speak. And way, way up in Mathura, there was one devotee from all the way in South India who had become, he wanted to go on pilgrimage. And the Sri Vaishnavas have 108 places of pilgrimage. And 106 of them are within this world, and two of them are in Vaikuntha. So you can go to 106 places of pilgrimage, but you have to wait until you get your moksha, your liberation, before you go to parampara, to the other two. So he'd gone to Mathura, where of course there are many different places of pilgrimage associated with Krishna. And one day he looked south and he saw a light off in the distance. At least this is how the story goes. He saw a light off in the distance. And at the same time he had a feeling in his heart that now, after coming to Mathura, it was the time to go all the way home. And so he went all the way home. And he went to see the source of this light. And he came to this temple. And he saw this young lad sitting under a tamarind tree in the courtyard. And something in him knew, this is my spiritual master. And I think that most devotees are waiting for such a thing to happen to them, aren't they? We hope that such miracles will be there in our life. So he thought, this is my guru. Of course, he was already... well, this is another thing. But usually you become initiated, if you're a Brahmin, you become initiated when you're 8 years old. So everybody, many people in India, most of the upper classes, are initiated when they're between the ages of 8 and 12. And then later on, of course, it is the Shiksha Guru who's the most important person, because he supplements but does not replace the information and blessings achieved from the Diksha Guru. So, anyway, we could spend a long time on that particular subject. But so in that case, Diksha is a sub-function of Shiksha. So he already had his Diksha Guru. But here was someone who so obviously seemed to have something special about him. In other words, I was in a holy place. I saw the light. It was a different kind of light. It wasn't just the sun. It wasn't just the moon. It wasn't just the stars. But it led me to this place. Here is a person sitting under a tree. There must be something for me here. And at the same time, tesham evanukampartham agyam ajnanam jangtamaha nashyami atmabhavasto, that Krishna is the small lamp burning within the heart. So when there is an external corroboration, there's also an internal cooperation. And Krishna speaks to you from within the heart and says, yes, this moment for you will be particularly auspicious. Something will happen now. And then you stick around a little longer. And so he was there, and he somehow felt that it was his duty to persuade this young lad to speak. Now, sometimes this exercise is taken on by Krishna himself. There was another young lad of exactly the same age within the womb of the wife of Srila Vyasadeva, high up in the Himalayas. And Krishna himself personally had to come all the way from Dwarka to come to speak to the child, to ask him, my dear son, now I want you to come out. Because he had achieved perfection in the womb. This is very helpful for the child in the womb, but not very helpful for the mother. Because the child thinks, like we say with Krishna, dehi deha vibhavo yam. Krishna inside, Krishna outside is the same. Krishna has no body, you see. You have a body, and you are a soul. You are a soul that has a body. But Krishna is all soul. There's no body, you see. Dehi deha vibhavo yam. So his inside and his outside is completely the same. Krishna doesn't have to become self-realized because he's already the self, you see. You have to become self-realized because you're not the body. So you have to become free from the conception of what you're not, and become established in the conception of what you are. But if a young child becomes fixed in consciousness of Brahman within the womb, he doesn't want to come out. What's the point? Inside, outside, it's just the same. Why should I be born? You see? And why should material nature cause that child to be born? Because material nature she recognizes here is a great saint. What's the point of him coming? You see, so Lord Krishna himself came and he said, no, now is the time for you to be born. You have a great task. And so at that time, the child came out. And of course, immediately he came out, you see, he started to walk. Normally, children don't start walking immediately. They just sort of lie there, don't they? For a very long time. And then they start rocking and gurgling and more gurgling. But they're usually pretty disabled, actually, for a while. And then they start rolling. Then they'll do a bit of crawling. And eventually they take their first step to the joy of mother and father. So there was none of this. Srila Vyasadeva was completely deprived of any childhood enjoyment, because Sukadeva just came out, stood up, and naked started to walk, you know, down the mountain. And he only had one mission. And this mission had been given to him by Shri Krishna, Dwarkadish himself. Find a person who is ready to receive the highest teachings. And Srila Vyasadeva, he had caused Sukadeva, his son, to be born, of course, because why? He was troubled by the fact that he had written the Vedas and he still felt dissatisfied. Normally, when you do write that book that you've been longing to write, they say everybody's got a book in them. Srila Vyasadeva had, he was the literary incarnation of God, so he had many, many books. But when he'd written them for the benefit of human society, he felt unhappy. And he wondered why. He thought, I've got everything that was in me out onto the pages. My disciples are learning different portions of the Vedas, and they are chanting them, reciting them, learning them. That's the reason why my daughter asked me the other day. She said, why, when we have a Bhagavatam class or a Gita class, if the verse is already there in the book, why did Prabhupada ask us to chant the verse, you know, sometimes up to 10 times? Why do we do that? What's the point? You know? And I said, well, the point is that this is coming from the days when the disciples would actually chant the verse in order to remember it. And each verse that you study every day is meant to be chanted 10 times so that you learn that verse for the day. Just see, you learn a verse by chanting it 10 times. Actually, in a Vedic ashram, you learn the verse backwards. Or you learn it so good that you can chant it backwards. You see? They have different ways of learning. One way of learning is what we do. We learn it, you know, lines like that. And then in a Vedic ashram, when you finish that, then you learn, then you start chanting it like this. Se bhakta, se bhakta, se bhakta, bhakta gana, bhakta gana, gana hoi, gana hoi, and then you'll go, bhakta gana hoi, bhakta gana hoi, then se bhakta gana hoi, and you'll do like that. So either it's 1, 2, 3, and then 2, 3, and then 1, 2, 3, and then another set of, like that. So then you may learn it backwards. And then you know each meaning. And then you learn it in 8 different melodies. Okay? So you've got it easy. So Srila Vyasadeva, he had all his disciples chanting mantras up there, but he was dissatisfied. Why was he dissatisfied? He was dissatisfied, and so at this point of dissatisfaction, when he was feeling very despondent, it was then that his guru appeared. People always say, the guru appears when your time is right. They say like that, don't they? The guru appears when your time is right. Certainly, when you ask God to send you a guru, then you can be sure that God will bless you. You see. Of course, how do you know who God is in the first place to pray to him for a guru? It was probably a guru who told you in the first place, right? Anyway, so when Arjuna was despondent, at that point, he chose Krishna, his longtime friend, to be his guru. So he turned to him and he said, okay, now you be the guru. So here's Vyasadeva. He himself is despondent. Who is Vyasadeva going to turn to? He's the literary incarnation of Godhead. Who's he going to turn to for a guru? Well, it just so happens that even the guru of everybody, that's why we call the annual birthday ceremony of our guru, we say, I'm going to celebrate Vyasa Puja. Why are you going to celebrate Vyasa Puja? What's Vyasadeva got to do with your guru? Well, because your guru is a representative of his guru, who's a representative of his guru, and all the way back to Vyasadeva, who's the original guru. That's why we call it Vyasa Puja. That's why I'm sitting on a asan, which, if I repeat the words of Vyas, may possibly be a Vyasasan. But the real Vyasasan is sat on by Vyas, okay, and someone who truly represents Vyas. So here's Vyas, the original spiritual master, and he's feeling despondent. Everything that's in him has been written down. Why should he feel unhappy? Well, this looks like a case for the guru. So at that moment, just when he needed it, he heard the sounds of the celestial veena, this beautiful musical instrument. And he looked up, of course, and there was Narada Muni. Now, Narada Muni doesn't walk, you see. Narada Muni has the two qualities of the demigods. Now, one is Animish, whose eyes do not blink. And one, Sanskrit, I forget, the feet do not touch the ground. Okay. So then he says, my child, what is wrong with you? He says, well, I'm feeling very despondent. I've done what I thought you wanted me to do. I've written these books. He said, you have failed to glorify the spotless supreme personality of Godhead. That is why your heart is still not complete. You're not completely satisfied. You haven't got complete santosh. So then he writes his natural commentary on the Veda, Vedanta, Vedanta Sutra, then all the Upanishads, then the Puranas, then Bhagavat Purana, in this order of progressive revelation. Lord Krishna himself, Vedaischa Sarvairaham Eva Vedyo Vedanta Krid Vedavid Eva Chaham. He's the knower of the Vedas, he's the purpose of the Vedas, and he's non-different from the Vedas, and he's the speaker of the Vedas. You see, Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. So that speaker of the Vedas, the personification of the Vedas, Sri Krishna says that actually the Vedas are mainly dealing with the modes of material nature. How to use them, how to rise through them, how to transcend them, at least as much as you take your next birth and you'll be quite happy in your next birth. You'll be happy in this life and happy in your next. That's what most people want, you see. You want a good family? Okay, follow the Vedas. You want a beautiful wife, beautiful husband? Follow the Vedas, okay? Because it's all in there. That's what you'll find in the Vedas. You'll find many things. But if you want to enjoy this world, that's in the Vedas. If you want to look at this world and understand that actually the enjoyment is temporary, then read Vedanta. And if you want the pithy quotes, you read Vedanta Sutra. You want to be able to separate matter from spirit and understand the controller of both, then you read Upanishads. Particularly as Prabhupada gave us the Sri Isha Upanishad, the Katha Upanishad, the Kena Upanishad, the Brihadaranyaka. So there's a progression even in the Upanishads, you see. But let's be clear about this. It finds its revelation, its perfect revelation in Srimad Bhagavatam. That is why Bhagavatam is known as Amala Purana. It's a Purana, but it's spotless, You see, there are some Puranas that deal with Lord Shiva. And when there's a battle between Lord Narayan and Lord Shiva, you will find Lord Shiva wins. You see? And then the story, the final chapter of the story, you'll find in the Vishnu Purana or the Nrisimha Purana. You see? Sometimes you'll find, if you're in the mode of passion, you will find that you have to engage in certain types of very strenuous activity and very regulated fasting. You'll find these things in books like the Agni Purana. Like, there's so many thousands and thousands of recitation of particular verses. You'll find that. But in the Bhagavatam, what do we find? We find all the personalities of Godhead. We will find Godhead. We will find the personalities of Godhead. But half of the Srimad Bhagavatam is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Half of the Bhagavatam, half of the 18,000 verses we find, all about Krishna. And even there, you will find Krishna as Vasudev. You'll find Krishna as Dwarkadish. You'll find Krishna as Mathuresh. And you'll find Krishna as Vrindavan Chandra. You see? So, in this way, there's a progression. So Vyasadev was told by his spiritual master, then Sukadev was born, and the child carries on the urgent message of the father. That's the idea. The family business is carried on by the son. So here we have the family business. So what did he do? He stood up and he started walking. And his father said, "Wait, wait, my son, my son." And the Bhagavatam tells us, the only thing that the father got back after his tearful shouting out for his son was an echo. That's all that came back to him. Just the trees echoed in response to the bereaved father. That's all he got. So anyway, he finally catches up with his son. By that time, his son has found someone who will perfectly, you know. So the perfect guru, the incarnation of the Bhagavatam, the incarnation also of the urgency to speak the Bhagavatam, has found the perfect person to listen to the Bhagavatam, and that is Maharaj Parikshit. We went to the Krishna Avanti school yesterday, and the first marble carving is Parikshit listening to Sukadev Goswami. Now, there's a certain sense of urgency with Parikshit because he only has a little time left. So there's no time to waste. And normally a conversation that you have when there's little time to waste is a very important conversation. The house is on fire. You don't ask about the weather. This is called small talk. Small talk means you can say a lot without saying anything at all. Small talk is for when you go to the post office or when you go to the local shop. Gosh, it's a bit cold today, isn't it? Yeah, isn't it? It's a bit snippy. A bit colder than it was yesterday. I don't think it's quite as cold as it was Tuesday last week. And they say we're in for a bit more snow. But anyway, how are you? How are you coping? Oh, I managed to clean the snow away from my... All small talk. Because, why? Because it deals with your doorstep, the weather, things that are completely changeable. You need to do it. This is all part of relationship building with your network of friends and relatives. But there must come time when you have a real conversation with someone. Now, in a real conversation, the real conversations you have with the following people. Firstly, your doctor. Okay? His time is limited, especially his time with you or her time with you. So you go in to see your doctor and they won't mess around. You go to see your surgeon, he definitely won't mess around. Because he doesn't have any time even to be nice. You see? Surgeons, and I know a few surgeons, they seem to thrive on just direct speech. They've perfected the art of telling you, you know, the news about yourself. And not always couching that news in a nice way. Why? Because their job is to cut. Their job is to see the disease and immediately take a knife to you. And in fact, anyway, so they see you as someone really who should be cut. Because that's, you know, just like a Bengali mother. Okay, because she's sitting here, Elton. A Bengali mother, or really we should say a Gujarati mother. But a Bengali mother, both of them. They will see a young man who comes to their house. What is the first thing they see about the young man? Oh, you must be hungry. Sit down, sit down. Let me feed you. I was just in the middle of cooking. What a lie. What she really means is, I've seen you, you've inspired me, that now I have to cook. So a young man is someone who needs to be fed. You see. That's why some young Indian men, it's very hard for them to leave home. Can't leave home. Especially these days when the wife that you marry can't cook. Why would a young Indian man leave home when his mother's a perfect cook? You see? Well, this is a way to reduce the divorce rate. You see? The wife should always know how to cook, then the husband won't leave. Okay? If you can eat out at a restaurant, and the restaurant eating is better than the food that you get at home, then leaving your wife becomes easy. You see? But Vedic culture, therefore, one of the secrets, a woman's power over a man, is cooking. Anyway, that's just a little something. But a surgeon, he doesn't see, oh, you poor thing, you must be hungry. He says, no food, no eating. As soon as you come this close to a surgeon, he says, okay, I don't want you to eat. Lie down, let me cut something. See, the perfection of his life is to cut. Similarly, unfortunately, the guru's business is to be like that. He does both. He does both, actually. Therefore, we say about the guru, Chaturvida, Shri Bhagavat Prasada, Svadvana Triptan Hari Bhakta Sangam. He can give you Hari Bhakti by feeding you with Hari Prasad. That's his business. But the other thing that he does first is he cuts you. You see? One time they asked Prabhupada, what is a guru? And every time they asked Prabhupada, what is a guru? He would give a different, you know, he would give a different response. To John Lennon, he said, a guru, because John Lennon at that time was having trouble with drugs. So Prabhupada said to him, he said, you just find out someone who's completely addicted to Krishna. You see? This was an example he thought he would find relevant. So another person asked Prabhupada, what is a guru? He said, and he said, just like these spectacles, I can see you, and I put my spectacles on, now I can see you better. He said, he took the spectacles off, he said, this is transparent via media. You see? So it's really helping the eyes to see. So then someone else asked him, what is a guru? And he said, guru is someone, he said, that you must commit suicide of the ego. That person to whom you commit suicide of the ego. In front of that person, you remove the ego. Kill the ego. And he will kill it for you. So this means that the guru has, you know, a very, in one sense, it's a very dangerous position. Because I love my guru, I love my guru. But now he wants to cut. Oh, I hate my guru, I hate my guru. So like that, looking at your surgeon is a little bit like that. I'm sorry, doctor, if you're watching this right now. But sometimes I see him, I think, this is the person who saved my life. And sometimes I see him, this is the person who wants to cut me more. So what to do? Do I love him or do I hate him? Ultimately, I'm here because of his kindness and his skill. So it is the same way with the guru. Gaurkishore Das Babaji, he said, a man will tolerate his daughter saying all kinds of insulting words to him. Time after time after time after time. Those of you who have daughters, you will know. You're all young men. But those of you who are older, if you have a daughter, you'll know that they get it to a point in their life and they can be very insulting, very offensive. But you don't take it seriously. Gaurkishore Das Babaji said, a man can listen to his daughter insult him time and time again, and he will tolerate. But if that man's guru once, he says, just once, says something to him that is insulting, the man cannot, he cannot hear anymore. So Gokishore was lamenting how people say, oh, Guruji, I want you as my guru, I want you as my guru. Okay, now I want you to give up this, I want you to forget this, I want you to do this, because that's what Krishna does. Okay, we're friends, we're friends, we're friends. We go hunting together. We find wives together. We look at princesses together. We go chariot running together. We go sports together. We wrestle together. But now that you've asked me to be your guru, immediately Krishna, in the first minute, he said, you're a fool. You're a fool. And if Arjuna at that point had turned around and said, Krishna, you know, I never thought that it would come to this. We've been together now for, well, how long was it? It was a very long time, wasn't it? Many, many years. We've been together now for a long time. And, you know, you've known me for a long time. I've known you for a long time. You've never spoken to me like that. And now you've insulted me. At a time when I needed your help the most. Here I am. You've seen that I'm in tears. You've seen that I have a battle in front of me. I've got to fight with these people. I've asked you for help. And at the very time I asked you for help, you've called me a fool. Krishna was very strong with him. I'm going home. I don't want to listen to this anymore. I've had enough. I can't deal with this anymore. You see. But when you take someone as a guru, it means be prepared for the old ego that's been with you for many millions of lifetimes to take a bit of a battering. But that tiny soul wants freedom. But it can't be free until you have laid to rest this person who's feeding off you. And who is this person that's feeding off you? It's really a dead body. It's a dead weight. And it's an evil mind. And only if you understand that the mind is the worst enemy can you actually be free from the control of the mind. Only if you're willing to come to the point of thinking, practically every single thought I have ever had up to this point is self-serving, arrogant, foolish, full of pride, God-denying, God-envying, God-hating, and I really want this to change. When you think like that, that's the time to ask for a guru's help, not before. Prabhupada said, don't make a guru a fashion. Everybody's got a guru, I want a guru. You see? That's like saying, oh, everybody else has got a surgeon, I want one. Okay. But do you know what having your own surgeon means? They will look at you and they'll think, right, what can I cut? And if you don't want to know, I wanted a surgeon because all my friends had one, but I don't want you to cut anything. He said, then you don't need a surgeon. You see? It's quite easy. You know. Isn't it? So don't ask for a guru unless you're prepared to deal with the consequences. There's an old story about the guru and his disciple that go down to the water, and he takes his head and puts the disciple's head underneath the water. Just for those of you, this is not a story in ISKCON, okay? Well, in this part of ISKCON. So he puts his head and he puts it under the water. And the disciple starts flapping like this. And then he pulls him up. And he said, so my son, what were you thinking of while you were down there? He said, at first I was thinking, this hurts. Then I was thinking, why is my guru doing this? And then ultimately I was thinking, I just have to get out. I have to get out of this. I have to get out. I need air. I need air. I need air. And the guru said, yes. This is how desperate you must be as a practitioner in spiritual life to become free from Maya. This is how desperate you must be every moment. Okay. So the guru is meant to keep us on our toes. But the first thing he will say is something that doesn't sound very nice. If you want a guru to flatter you, then you will find so many. You'll find so many. So many, how are you, my dear disciple? I see you're smiling. I see you're so happy. You look so happy. This is your child. Very nice. How old is he? Oh, he's growing very nicely. Very good. So I'll be back again next year. If this is the guru you want, there are many available. You see? But if you actually want to make that personal transformation, be prepared. Be prepared. So Vyasadeva was prepared, and he got a son who then became his own guru, because Vyasadeva sat and he listened to the Srimad Bhagavatam from his own son. You see? Son became the guru of the father. So anyway, back to my original story and then I'll finish. So Nama Alwar is sitting there, and this Madhura Kavi, who's also Alwar, is also an older man, he's with a young man, teenager, a boy, who isn't initiated, doesn't know anything, you see? But he's in trance. Somehow he knows it is my duty to bring this child out of trance. So eventually, by glorifying the Lord, by chanting lots of Sanskrit verses, he brings him out of his trance. And the first thing he begins to speak, which is highly unusual for the Sri Sampradaya, is a glorification of Krishna and his dance with the gopis in Vrindavan under the Sharat moon. You see? And it just comes out of him like a flood. He just speaks and he speaks and he speaks and he speaks like this. And then when he's older, he writes a book. And this book is known as the Tiruvaimoli. And the Tiruvaimoli is like the Chaitanya Charitamrita of the Sri Sampradaya. But in that book, he's describing Krishna. In some parts, he's describing Ram's relationship with Kaushalya, and he's describing Krishna's relationship with Yashoda, but he describes Krishna. You see? But instead, the Sri Sampradaya focuses on because it is from Sri, from Lakshmi, focuses on the relationship between the Lord and his eternal devotees in Vaikuntha. So here we have, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he's writing this original thing. He's saying, this is what my book is about. And I'm praying to that person who is, so he, every morning we chant this, Om Yam Brahma Vedanta Vado Vedanti Pare Pradhanam Purusham Tatanye Vishvod Gate Karanam Ishwarang Va Tasmai Namo Vigna Vinashaya. This is what devotees, beyond that curtain, every day they're chanting. Okay, this is a great mystery. Oops, now I've told you the secret. So they're chanting this prayer, which means that that person, or that which is described as Brahman in the Upanishads, is actually the Paramapurusha, is actually the Supreme Person. Then we chant, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pashanti Surayo Deviva Chakshura Atatam Tad Vipraso Vipanyavo Jagravangsa Samindade Vishnu Yat Paramam Padam. That those persons in this world, just as some persons see the sun in the sky, an ordinary person sees the sun in the sky, so that person who is a servant of the Lord sees the supreme abode of the Lord while still in this world. Just as real as we see the sun, they will see the supreme abode, Vaikuntha, of the Lord. And then the verses go on. Then, Naham vipro na cha narapatira na api vaisho na shudro Naham varani na cha griyapatira no vanasto yatirava Kintu prodhyan nikila paramananda purnamritabdir Gopi bharatu parakamalayora dasa dasa anudasa. Spoken by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So our progression of verses as we begin to worship Krishna is like the progression of verses that we find in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita. We're stating, yes, there's the Vedas, You know? We say Om Krishna Vai Sachidanandagana, Krishna Adi Purusha, Krishna Purushottama, Krishna Ha U Karmadi Mulam. That is from the Rig Veda. So Krishna you'll find even in the Rig Veda. You see? Then we're saying in the Upanishads, you'll find Krishna. Then finally, in the Bhagavatam, you'll find Krishna. And then from the mouth of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you'll find Krishna. So in the beginning, here he's going through that sequence of verses. Of course, it's a lot to digest for a person who just comes to Krishna consciousness. And therefore, Chaitanya Charitamrita is known as the postgraduate study of love of God. The postgraduate study. You see, of course, Prabhupada had them distributed in airports, you see, for people who knew nothing. Yeah. We used to distribute Chaitanya Charitamrita on Sankirtan. See, Christmas marathon. Okay, Maha Big. What was the Maha Big we were distributing? Chaitanya Charitamrita. Okay, so a person opens the book, okay, and the first thing he finds when he opens the book is, you know, what does he find? Let's see. I offer my full obeisances to the feet of Nityananda Ram. Okay. I surrender unto the feet of Nityananda Ram. I offer my obeisances to Nityananda Ram and to Krishna. So he's plunged into the deepest part of the most pregnant realization of the great sage Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. But that's why Prabhupada took the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he took the teachings and he rendered it as the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which was a very important book that we no longer distribute on the street. I do not know why. It's one of the cardinal books. If you've never read the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, you may discover to your horror that you have not read one of the books that Prabhupada said we should read. You see? There are many, many books. I used to work in a mail order department along with Deepak. And in that mail order department, I counted at one time, and this was 20 years ago, there was about 450 books written by ISKCON authors. If you find in your life that you're reading books by many ISKCON authors, but you've not read teachings of Lord Chaitanya, then an alarm bell should ring in your head. Because Prabhupada lists the books that we should read. And curiously enough, the books that Prabhupada wants us to read are the books that he wrote. And the books that he wrote first. Isn't that interesting? There must be a reason why we're reading teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Because it is the most potent conversations Lord Chaitanya has with Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, in which the whole philosophy of our sampradaya is laid out for us to understand. As I said a couple of weeks ago, the Vedas are for everybody, both the devotees and the demons. Then the Upanishads are for the transcendentalists. Then the Bhagavad Gita is for the transcendentalists who have some devotional inclination. The Srimad Bhagavatam is for the devotees and for the persons who are most intelligent. We have teachings of Lord Chaitanya first, and then we have Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because in this book, Chaitanya Charitamrita, no one will read this book except the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Millions of other people read the Bhagavatam. Hundreds of millions of people have read Bhagavad Gita. But only those who are exclusive followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will read Chaitanya Charitamrita. Why? Because it's the story of his life and teachings, which only become relevant. Prabhupada says, why is Bhagavad Gita relevant? You know, each one of us today will have a conversation that lasts an hour, which will be interesting. But he said Bhagavad Gita is relevant because it's Bhagavan's Gita. You have your Gita, that's all right. You can talk about whatever you want. But when Krishna speaks for an hour, that's of unlimited importance because Krishna is an unlimited person. He's the supreme person. So when he speaks for an hour, that's a book to be read. But just because you read Bhagavad Gita doesn't mean that you'll read Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Chaitanya Charitamrita is very, very important. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami here, he's saying that there are two types of devotees. One are the liberated personal associates of the Lord, and there are those who are trying to be eternal liberated associates of the Lord. You see? Normally when an acharya such as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami makes a twofold classification like this, it's for making a particular point. So making a particular point. Because he knows that Rupa Goswami says, well, actually, there's three different classifications of devotee. But he's making a point here between those who are liberated and those who are trying to be liberated, the sadhana bhaktas. And then in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that those who are perfected, there are those in Vaikuntha and those in Vrindavan. He doesn't say the ones in Vaikuntha are neophytes. He says they're perfect devotees. You don't get to Vaikuntha without being a perfect devotee, but their attraction to the Lord is of a different order. Is it a material thing? No, it's not material. That's not what he says. He says they are attracted by a particular feature of the relationship with the Lord. And there are those who are attracted by this feeling of intimate service with the Lord. All right, we will finish there. Any questions?